Anne's. He waited 10 minutes for a car, and none came. He turned the corner and walked, his head down, his hands dug into his pockets, going to Dalton's. He was confident. During the last day and night, new fears had come, but new feelings had helped to allay those fears. The moment when he had stood above Mary's bed and found that she was dead, the fear of electrocution had entered his flesh and blood. But at home, at the breakfast table with his mother and sister and brother, seeing how blind they were, and overhearing Peggy and Mrs. Dalton talking in the kitchen, a new feeling had been born in him, a feeling that all but blotted out the fear of death. As long as he moved carefully and knew what he was about, he could handle things, he thought. As long as he could take his life into his own hands and dispose of it as he pleased. As long as he could decide just when and where he would run to, he need not be afraid. He felt that he had his destiny in his grasp. He was more alive than he could ever remember having been. His mind and attention were pointed, focused toward a goal. For the first time in his life, he moved consciously between two sharply defined poles. He was moving away from the threatening penalty of death, from the death-like times that brought him that tightness and hotness in his chest. And he was moving toward that sense of fullness he had so often but inadequately felt in magazines and movies. The shame and fear and hate, which Mary and Jan and Mr. Dalton and that huge rich house had made rise so hard and hot in him, had now cooled and softened. Had he not done what they thought he never could, his being black and at the bottom of the world was something which he could take with a newborn strength. What his knife and gun had once meant to him, his knowledge of having secretly murdered Mary now meant. No matter how they laughed at him for his being black and clown-like, he could look them in the eyes and not feel angry. The feeling of being always enclosed in the stifling embrace of an invisible force had gone from him. As he turned into Drexel Boulevard and headed toward Dalton's, he thought of how restless he had been, how he was consumed always with a body hunger. Well, in a way, he had settled that tonight. As time passed, he would make it more definite. His body felt free and easy now that he had lain with Bessie. That she would do what he wanted was what he had sealed in asking her to work with him in this thing. She would be bound to him by ties deeper than marriage. She would be his. Her fear of capture and death would bind her to him with all the strength of her life, even as what he had done last night had bound him to this new path with all the strength of his own life. He turned off the sidewalk and walked up the Dalton driveway, went into the basement, and looked through the bright cracks of the furnace door. He saw a red heap of seething coals and heard the upward hum of the draft. He pulled the lever, hearing the rattle of coal against tin and seeing the quivering embers grow black. He shut off the coal and stooped and opened the bottom door of the furnace. Ashes were piling up. He would have to take the shovel and clean them out in the morning and make sure that no unburnt bones were left. He had closed the door and started to the rear of the furnace, going to his room, when he heard Peggy's voice. "Bigger!" He stopped, and before answering, he felt a keen sensation of excitement flush all over his skin. She was standing at the head of the stairs, in the door leading to the kitchen. "Yes'm?" He went to the bottom of the steps and looked upward. "Mrs. Dalton wants you to pick up the trunk at the station."
"The trunk?"
He waited for Peggy to answer his surprised question. Perhaps he should not have asked it in that way.
"They called up and said that no one had claimed it, and Mr. Dalton got a wire from Detroit. Mary never got there."
"Yes'm."
She came all the way down the stairs and looked round the basement, as though seeking some missing detail. He stiffened. If she saw something that would make her ask him about Mary, he would take the iron shovel and let her have it straight across her head, and then take the car and make a quick getaway.
Mr. Dalton's worried, Peggy said. You know, Mary didn't pack the new clothes she bought to take with her on the trip, and poor Mrs. Dalton's been pacing the floor and phoning Mary's friends all day.
Don't nobody know where she is? Bigger asked.
Nobody. Did Mary tell you to take the trunk like it was?
Yes'm, he said, knowing that this was the first hard hurdle. It was locked and standard in a corner. I took it down and put it right where you saw it this morning.
Oh, Peggy!
Mrs. Dalton's voice called.
Yes, Peggy answered.
Bigger looked up and saw Mrs. Dalton at the head of the stairs, standing in white as usual, and with her face tilted trustingly upward.
Is the boy back yet?
He's down here now, Mrs. Dalton.
Come in the kitchen a moment, will you, Bigger? She asked.
Yes'm. He followed Peggy into the kitchen. Mrs. Dalton had her hands clasped tightly in front of her, and her face was still tilted, higher now, and her white lips were parted.
Peggy told you about picking up the trunk?
Yes'm. I'm on my way now.
What time did you leave here last night?
A little before 2, ma'am.
And she told you to take the trunk down?
Yes'm.
And she told you not to put the car up?
Yes'm.
And it was just where you left it last night when you came this morning?
Yes'm.
Mrs. Dalton turned her head as she heard the inner kitchen door open. Mr. Dalton stood in the doorway.
Hello, Bigger.
Good day, sir.
How are things?
Fine, sir.
The station called about the trunk a little while ago. You'll have to pick it up.
Yes, sir. I'm on my way now, sir.
Listen, Bigger, what happened last night?
Well, nothing, sir. Miss Dalton told me to take the trunk down so I could take it to the station this morning. And I did.
Was Jan with you?
Yes, sir. All three of us went upstairs when I brought him in the car. We went to the room to get the trunk. Then I took it down and put it in the basement.
Was Jan drunk?
Well, I don't know, sir. They was drinking.
And what happened?
Nothing, sir. I just took the trunk to the basement and left. Miss Dalton told me to leave the car out. She said Mr. Jam would take care of it.
What were they talking about?
Bigger hung his head.
I don't know, sir.
He saw Mrs. Dalton lift her right hand, and he knew that she meant for Mr. Dalton to stop questioning him so closely. He felt her shame.
That's all right, Bigger, Mrs. Dalton said.
She turned to Mr. Dalton.
Where do you suppose this Jan would be now?
Maybe he's at the Labor Defender office.
Can you get in touch with him?
Well, said Mr. Dalton, standing near Bigger and looking hard at the floor. I could, but I'd rather wait. I still think Mary's up to some of her foolish pranks. Bigger, you'd better get that trunk.
Yes, sir.
He got the car and drove through the falling snow toward the loop. In answering their questions, he felt that he had succeeded in turning their minds definitely in the direction of Jan. If things went at this pace, he would have to send the ransom note right away. He would see Bessie tomorrow and get things settled. Yes. He would ask for $10,000. He would have Bessie stand at the window of an old building at some well-lighted street corner with a flashlight. In the note, he would tell Mr. Dalton to put the money in a shoebox and drop it in the snow at the curb. He would tell him to keep his car moving and his lights blinking, and not to drop the money until he saw the flashlight blink 3 times in the window. Yes, that's how it would be. Bessie would see the lights of Mr. Dalton's car blinking,
and after the car was gone, she would pick up the box of money. It would be easy. He pulled the car into the station, presented the ticket, got the trunk, hoisted it to the running board, and headed again for the Dalton home. When he reached the driveway, the snow was falling so thickly that he could not see 10 feet in front of him. He put the car into the garage, set the trunk in the snow, locked the garage door, lifted the trunk to his back, and carried it to the entrance of the basement. Yes, the trunk was light. It was half empty. No doubt they would question him again about that. Next time he would have to go into details, and he would try to fasten hard in his mind the words he spoke, so that he could repeat them 1,000 times if necessary. He could, of course, set the trunk in the snow right now and take a streetcar and get the money from Bessie and leave town. But why do that? He could handle this thing. It was going his way. They were not suspecting him, and he would be able to tell the moment their minds turned in his direction. And too, he was glad he had let Bessie keep that money. Suppose he were searched here on the job. For them to find money on him was alone enough to fasten suspicion upon him definitely. He unlocked the door and took the trunk inside. His back was bent beneath its weight, and he walked slowly with his eyes on the wavering red shadows on the floor. He heard the fires singing in the furnace. He took the trunk to the corner in which he had placed it the night before. He put it down and stood looking at it. He had an impulse to open it and look inside. He stooped to fumble with the metal clasp, then started violently, jerking upright. Bigger? Without answering, and before he realized what he was doing, he whirled, his eyes wide with fear, and his hand half raised as though to ward off a blow. The moment of whirling brought him face to face with what seemed to his excited senses an army of white men. His breath stopped, and he blinked his eyes in the red darkness, thinking that he should be acting more calmly. Then he saw Mr. Dalton and another white man standing at the far end of the basement. In the red shadows, their faces were white disks of danger, floating still in the air. "Oh," he said softly. The white man at Mr. Dalton's side was squinting at him. He felt that tight, hot, choking fear returning. The white man clicked on the light. He had a cold, impersonal manner that told Bigger to be on his guard. In the very look of the man's eyes, Bigger saw his own personality reflected in narrow, restricted terms. "What's the matter, boy?" the man asked. Bigger said nothing. He swallowed, caught hold of himself, and came forward slowly. The white man's eyes were steadily upon him. Panic seized Bigger as he saw the white man lower his head, narrow his eyes still more, sweep back his coat and ram his hands into his pants pockets, revealing as he did so a shining badge on his chest. Words rang in Bigger's mind. "This is a cop." He could not take his eyes off the shining bit of metal. Abruptly, the man changed his attitude and expression, took his hands from his pocket, and smiled a smile that Bigger did not believe. "I'm not the law, boy, so don't be scared." Bigger clamped his teeth. He had to control himself. He should not have let that man see him staring at his badge.
"Yes, sir," he said.
"Bigger, this is Mr. Britton," Mr. Dalton said. "He is a private investigator attached to the staff of my office."
"Yes, sir,"
Bigger said again, his tension slackening.
"He wants to ask you some questions, so just be calm and try to tell him whatever he wants to know."
"Yes, sir." This ends Disc 5. Native Son, Disc 6.
"First of all, I want to have a look at that trunk," Britton said. Bigger stood aside as they passed him. He glanced quickly at the furnace. It was still very hot, droning. Then he, too, went to the trunk, standing discreetly to one side, away from the two white men, looking with surface eyes at what they were doing. He shoved his hands deep into his pockets. He stood in a peculiar attitude that allowed him to respond at once to whatever they said or did, and at the same time to be outside and away from them. He watched Britton turn the trunk over and bend to it and try to work the lock.
I got to be careful, Bigger thought. One little slip now, and I'll spoil the whole thing.
Sweat came onto his neck and face. Britton could not unlock the trunk, and he looked upward at Bigger.
It's locked. You got a key, boy?
No, sir.
Bigger wondered if this were a trap. He decided to play safe and speak only when he was spoken to.
You mind if I break it?
Go right ahead, Mr. Dalton said. Say, Bigger, get Mr. Britton the hatchet.
Yes, sir,
he answered mechanically. He thought rapidly, his entire body stiff. Should he tell them that the hatchet was somewhere in the house, and offer to go after it and take the opportunity and run away? How much did they really suspect him? Was this whole thing a ruse to confuse and trap him? He glanced sharply and intently at their faces. They seemed to be waiting only for the hatchet. Yes, he would take a chance and stay. He would lie his way out of this. He turned and went to the spot where the hatchet had been last night, the spot from which he had taken it to cut off Mary's head. He stopped and pretended to search. Then he straightened.
It ain't here now. I saw it about here yesterday, he mumbled.
Well, never mind, Britton said. I think I can manage.
Bigger eased back toward them, waiting, watching. Britton lifted his foot and gave the lock a short, stout kick with the heel of his shoe and it sprang open. He lifted out the tray and looked inside. It was half empty, and the clothes were disarrayed and tumbled.
You see, Mr. Dalton said, she didn't take all of her things.
Yes, in fact, she didn't need a trunk at all from the looks of this, Britton said.
Bigger, was the trunk locked when she told you to take it down? Mr. Dalton asked.
Yes, sir, Bigger said, wondering if that answer was the safest.
Was she too drunk to know what she was doing, Bigger?
Well, they went into the room, he said. I went in after them. Then she told me to take the trunk down. That's all happened.
She could have put these things into a small suitcase, Britton said.
The fire sang in Bigger's ears, and he saw the red shadows dance on the walls. Let them try to find out who did it. His teeth were clamped hard until they ached.
Sit down, Bigger, Britton said.
Bigger looked at Britton, feigning surprise.
Sit on the trunk, Britton said.
Me?
Yeah, sit down.
He sat.
Now, take your time and think hard. I want to ask you some questions.
Yes, sir.
What time did you take Miss Dalton from here last night?
About 8:30, sir.
Bigger knew that this was it. This man was here to find out everything. This was an examination. He would have to point his answers away from himself quite definitely. He would have to tell his story. He would let each of the facts of his story fall slowly, as though he did not realize the significance of them. He would answer only what he was asked.
You drove her to school?
He hung his head and did not answer.
Come on, boy.
Well, mister, you see, I'm just working here.
What do you mean?
Mr. Dalton came close and looked hard into his face.
Answer his questions, Bigger.
Yes, sir.
You drove her to school?